I suck at jujitsu. How do I suck less?
I guess
you
suck less.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So today, I have a really good guest for you guys. Man, you have been spoiled as an I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show listener with the last 3 weeks, I think 4 weeks actually, but with my dad Kyle Watson on an episode with Junior and Nick from Revive Jiu-Jitsu, and then completing our short little tag team takeover, we have our good friend Devin Parada. He's been on the podcast once before, but it was through Zoom, and there's just such a difference when you get to be in person with somebody and reminisce a little bit. And so Devin and I get into so much good conversation in this episode, but I would say the general theme is competition and the prep of it, and really, really digging into the prep of it. What's cool is Devin actually listens to the podcast, and then we discuss certain ideas and discuss them deeper. And the last time we were at Pans, I just remember talking about same thing, performance and how to train and what days to train, and Devin and I just both picking each other's brains, seeing what's working. And so getting to do that again on this episode is just so much fun. And it's one of those episodes I learned some, but I was just shocked with what I learned. You know, it's just like, oh man, this is really good stuff. This is stuff that he claims is my idea, but I don't do it, and I need to be implementing this. But then also just where he came from. When we get into this, Devin came from probably the toughest training environment, or one of the toughest training environment in jiu-jitsu, in the history. It's just there's very little that's comparable to how he came up training. And we get into that and how hard that training was, how violent that training was, and now where he's at, right? Where he doesn't see, hey, everything I knew then was wrong. It was like, we did this really well, but how do I get this to my students without having to put them through eight-hour days of training and getting choked unconscious countless times? And we'll get into all that in this story. But today's episode, you guys, I think you're just really going to like. It's just a really fun one. And Devin is just such a fun guy to do a podcast with. And so I won't ramble too much. I have some cool stuff to tell you guys about at the very end of today's episode. But we will get into that later if you want to keep hearing me talk. But I'll stop wasting time. Let's go ahead and get into my interview with Devin Parada. Now, let's get started.
Okay.
Devin Parada, how are you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. We've done a podcast before, but never in person.
Yes, you know?
Mm-hmm. I always feel like that, especially with you and I, that feed off each other's energy too much, get way too pumped up about stuff.
Yeah.
Way too opinionated about stuff. For guys like you and I, the in-person works.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought a fun place to start, and I've actually had this plan of starting here for like 3 years, maybe a little less, but I know it was training at the old Revive. We're getting ready, and it's always good to bring up, start with like a locker room conversation. You know, We're changing, and I'm like, Devin, I don't know if anybody's doing no-gi today, and you're in full no-gi outfit, and you're like, yeah, I know. I'm like, okay, why are you wearing that? And you're like, oh, well, I wear it under my gi. You're like, I always wear it under my gi.
Stay ready.
Yeah. And so could you just give your reasoning for why you like to always wear your no-gi, full no-gi gear, shorts, rash guard in the gi, even when you're training in the gi?
I think Worlds 2010 or 2011, where I got pantsed pretty bad with just my underwear on. Mm-hmm. And I had this weird ordeal for the longest time to where I would wear the same underwear, like it was a lucky thing. And when I got pantsed, everybody saw how bad those underwear looked from wearing them for years. And I just thought, you know, it's just more convenient to have no-gi shorts on under it. But also, prefer no-gi over the gi. I think that's what it is. And you never know. Somebody takes the gi top off, just be ready to go. And take the I could take the pants off so nobody can get those sneaky grips on me.
Yeah.
If we're doing no-gi with the gi pants on like Eddie Bravo does, I'm like, well, you know what? I'm not into that.
Not going to get Toriano past today.
I'm just like, I need a breakaway gi. One with the buttons on the side just in case. Just and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I was just shocked by that. I mean, I have even adapted that lifestyle. Like, you got it. Because you were telling me, like, yeah, dude, what if a wrestler walks into your gym and is like, jiu-jitsu doesn't work?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. I have a bunch of guys. I don't have to. You're like, no, you got to defend.
You got to be ready to go.
I think that attitude about no-gi and gi really is your attitude about jiu-jitsu in general is just being ready.
Just got to be, you never know what's going to happen in one of those rooms, especially when I'm traveling somewhere else and, you know, I might meet some new people and maybe they want to get after it a different way. And I'm just like, hey, there's nobody else that wants to do it. And I'm like, well, I'm that guy. You know, I'll take the stuff off. We'll get after it. I've always enjoyed no-gi more than gi, although I like them both. And I can't really stand this whole, like, I'd rather do this, I'd rather do that. But I've always enjoyed no-gi more than gi. And, you know, when we go to these open mats and stuff or when it's not a class, I mean, I wear that no matter what. I always wear no-gi stuff under my gi. Even when I'm competing, I guess IBJJFs, you can't wear the rash guard, but I still have no-gi shorts on. So you never know, man.
That's really, dude, that's cool. My dad said growing up in his 20s, one of his best friends always wore a cup just in case.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, well, what if we get in a fight? My dad's like, I don't know. I got it.
Let me think ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense. You can't run to the bathroom.
No.
You know?
Hold on one second. Hold that thought. Let me go put my cup in. No, it's just ready to rock, dude.
I think you're right. I think so with your training in just kind of your mentality, the way that it is, and you're starting to get older,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you came up, and like this is from the last time that we talked. You came up in one of the hardest places to train and just like under a really hard coach, you drilled a lot. You did a lot on your body.
Yep.
How has your training adjusted as you've gotten older? Because I know for a fact that your mentality hasn't changed.
It's been quite an adjustment, you know, going from clean and then over time getting all these injuries and just realizing that's just not sustainable to train like that all the time. And then talking to you guys quite a bit, you know, and just listening to you, not to say that on your podcast, but being around you guys, being on tag team and just seeing how you guys prepare for things and how you guys train. And like, I just realized like there's certain rounds, like there's no need to train every single round because at a certain point I'm not doing jiu-jitsu anymore. I'm just surviving. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I realized when I'm trying to train hard every single round and trying to push it every single round, like that's when things start getting hurt. And now that I'm, you know, almost 36 now, turn 36 next month, just not sustainable to train like that all the time. So I try to make the rounds that I do count, and then I try to rest when I need to rest. So I'm still getting better at jiu-jitsu every time. I'm just not trying to be tough anymore. I know the last podcast we did was about, you know, I think it was called training, how to train tough. And, mm-hmm. you know, I still want to be tough, but that shouldn't be the forefront of my jiu-jitsu. It should mm-hmm. be about jiu-jitsu more than anything. So still bringing that toughness when I'm doing my rounds, but resting when I need to rest, having performance days, things like that. Like, that's been a big hit at my gym, too. Like, Jeremy's big on that now because Jeremy was just like me, and he's a little bit older than me. And he brings that up all the time about this is performance day, this is the day he's doing this, the day he's pulling back. And it's just so much more beneficial for the growth of jiu-jitsu to have that mindset, but can still train hard when it's time to train hard, but also rest when it's time to rest. So really, as I'm getting older, realizing that how beneficial that is, like resting is not a bad thing. It's a great thing, actually. Uh-huh. It's very beneficial. So that's really how I look at it now is, if I'm like super exhausted and I'm already aching, I'm like that next round, if I go in with somebody like a gym or somebody that's trying to take my head off, which everybody tries to take my head off at my gym or any gym, I swear. I've always been that kind of guy when I train is I'm just going to train hard. So everybody kind of expects that. I'm like, no, I don't get a round off. So I'm going to have to pull myself back to get that round off or else I'm going to get beat up. Something's going to get hurt. So mm-hmm. just, yeah, trying to be more smart about how I train.
When you, with that adjustment, do you ever catch yourself pushing it too much? And
oh, yeah, dude. I'll get, like, we were at a big open mat the other day and with Charlie Hershey's uh-huh. team, and David's team was over there too. And it was, you know, 50, 60 guys. And all it takes for me is like you don't have to say anything. I can go to take a restaurant and somebody just looks at me too long. I'm like, this guy wants it. Like, this guy wants the fight, dude. So I'm like, I have to be like, or call her my jiu-jitsu mom, my wife, Bianca. She has to pull me back every now and then. I'm like, dead tired. And I'm like, I just see a glance. Somebody just looks at me a little too long. I'm like, this guy thinks like, you want to take me out, dude. Yeah. So I go back out there and scrap with the guy. But getting over that, over this ego that I have, that just because somebody looks at me too long, or I just like, hey, you want to go? And just being like, you know what? I'm going to rest this round, instead of being like, oh, you calling me out? You think you're going to beat me up? Okay, cool. We're going. We're going now. But yeah, usually at this age is not working out as well as it used to. That's for sure.
Yeah, I get that. I think that even not that I'm obnoxiously younger than you, you know, but slightly, you know, even a little younger than you. I noticed that on, you know, we've kind of come up during the same time and it's hard on your body to train jiu-jitsu this long.
It is.
If you want to compete and if you want to be able to get better and perform, you really have to adjust your training.
Yeah.
And I see that, you know, and that's like something I think I started getting that idea from Mark. I think talking to Mark, who competes 52 times a year.
He's got it down, bro. Yeah. He got it down.
He told me, I interviewed him, and he's like, I'm going to take an off season. He's like, I'm going to take 6 weeks off. And then, like, I start asking him about specific dates of tournaments. And then, like, I start doing the math. And I'm like, hey, Mark, you know there's only 4 weeks in your six-week off season, right? And he's like, oh, yeah. You know, Nogi Worlds is in December. I'm like, it's always in December, Mark. Yeah. You know? But it is that, you know, he talks about the reason that he was able to do that is because he was able to kind of master that performance day and then just train to get better all those other days.
Yeah, he's got it down to where he can really do this year round. And there was times where I had to take a couple months break if I was competing a whole bunch a year. Sometimes I would compete 10 times a year, and it's where it would just add up. And I had to take these breaks when I really should have just been more efficient about it, and I could have picked and chosen or kind of competed like he did throughout those things. But I was just doing too much, and I think at a certain point I realized, I'm just like, I'm not, my game really isn't progressing that much. I'm either hurt all the time or I'm tired all the time, and I'm just not. And then I wouldn't look forward to jiu-jitsu sometimes because I'm so burnt out from training hard every single day. Mm-hmm. And it just was not, it wasn't working out.
I noticed that you are really you're, especially now, you know, you're just really willing to be like, okay, well, you know, maybe I could tweak this and it could be better. And you really are just willing to implement that.
Yeah.
And I think that is, like, a lot of coaches are fearful of like, oh, this new idea, I'm gonna try this.
Yeah.
You just always, ever since I've known you and talked to you about coaching, always been like, oh yeah, we'll try that. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
And have you always been that way?
No, I've for the longest time, there was a certain pattern I get stuck in, and I did, that's just what it would be. But I think maybe it was opening my gym or teaching at Body Fit beforehand. Like, a lot of what I'm doing now is not so much for me. Like, I need to get better so my team can get better. I need to be more relevant so my team can stay relevant. So it's just opening my mind up to new ideas and new techniques and new ways of training, more so I can use myself as an example and show the team of how it should be, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. just changing things up over the years just to make sure that I'm staying in tune with what's going on, more so as a coach than anything, because I really want my students to do well at a high level. And, mm-hmm. you know, going through what I went through with clean and all that stuff, you know, over time realizing that there's got to be a better approach and kind of opening up my mind to that. Because I was with clean, there was only one gear.
Yeah.
And it was all the way on all the time. So, and that could be for 1 hour a day, it could be 12 hours a day. It was wild, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you've heard the stories. It was crazy times, man. But I think going through that has really opened my eyes to how it can be now. And, you know, and obviously, like I said, being on the team I'm on now and being around you guys and seeing how you guys approach things and seeing your guys' success, it's like kind of opened my eyes to different ways to go about this, you know, mm-hmm. as far as me training, competing, as far as me coaching and helping my students out. And just, you know, and I don't have anything dialed in. I'm always trying to figure it out. But I think that's the good thing about what I'm doing now, is just keeping an open mind and always ready to adjust when I need to adjust and not be selfish about myself and really just be open so I can give back to the team, really.
So is there any old way that still is in you that you know, any old rules of jiu-jitsu? Because, like, we're talking about adapting and, you know, and being freer with our training and not always training hard.
Yeah.
But like I said, we came up during the same time, and there's a certain mentality that jiu-jitsu was then. Have you
have you dropped every, you know, have you dropped every tradition is what I'm asking.
No, we have a specific night that I call the clean. I pretty much call the clean night. It's a Wednesday night. It's our comp training, and I turn it pretty old school, but we only do that one day a week because it's just going to burn everybody out. But it's our comp training, and it's pretty violent and pretty vicious, and it's not really to get better at jiu-jitsu. It's really to break people mentally and see how much they can go through and how much and people show up, man, and they push themselves through it. But I think it's because they know Tuesday it's not going to be that hard. Thursday it's not going to be that hard. Wednesday is like the main focus on something like that. And I think there's a lot of value to that. You know, when push comes to shove in a match, you know, you got to know what you're willing to push through or what you're capable of when push comes to shove. So those nights, you know, it's pretty. And then when I'm teaching it or when I'm pushing people through it, definitely that clean side comes out. And it's, you know, not a lot of water breaks, not a lot of grace for certain things. And I even sound like them sometimes. It's just so ingrained in my head. So when that starts happening, it's just like, it just comes out, man. But then I dial it back in the next, you know, the days after that. But there's definitely a day where it's like, you know, I'm going to be unhinged a little bit. It's going to get a little wild in here. And, you know, I've kicked people out. We used to do this training at Body Fit before I opened my gym on Sundays, and I would call it an open mat, but it wasn't an open mat. This is when I was still competing a lot, and this is when it would really come out. And whoever showed up, everybody had to train with everybody at least once. So 15, 20 people were doing that many rounds.
Oh, man. And how long are the rounds?
They would be probably 6 minutes, so nothing like too crazy, 5 or 6 minutes. But
2 hours of straight training.
Oh, yeah, dude. Hours of straight training, and everybody had to go with everybody, so nobody's ducking anybody in the room. Like, you're going to get your medicine no matter what. And, you know, I had I had some specific rules. Like, if you showed up a minute late, I locked the door. So people would be outside banging on the door. I'm like, I'm not going to open it. You know what time training was. I'm not opening the door. And the second was, you couldn't – if there was an off round, you can rest. But if you rest 2 off rounds in a row, I'll kick you out. That's when I'd open the door back up and quietly yet firmly exit somebody out the door.
Okay.
So those are the days that's when it kind of come out. But I feel like for me, I still feel like that's benefit one day, you know, not every day. That was every day with clean. One day just for the dogs, man, we're not getting better at jiu-jitsu. I'll tell you that. We're definitely getting more mentally tough. And I think there's been a lot of benefit to that, man. I think, you know, I see it in tournaments when the students are getting tired and do a lot of positional training in those to where like I'll wear them down and still make them fight out of bad positions. And just like I said, it can't be like that every day, but one day a week, it definitely comes out. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So give me a play by play. Bryce and I, two outsiders, come in on a Wednesday night to experience what it's like. We're there on time. We're 15 minutes early. We're ready to go. What is that going to be like for us?
First off, you're signing a waiver. That's for sure. And secondly, I'm going to ask you who invited you there so that person get chastised if you guys just, you know, crap the bed during training so I can really give to that person. So my gym's very open to everybody, but those Wednesday nights, like if somebody invites somebody over, I make sure who invited them over just in case, like, they don't make it through it or they act like a baby or something like that, because that person that invited them is now going to get it because of that. But I'm definitely going to vet you a little bit before you come in. Where are you from? Got to sign the waiver. Got to know who invited you there. And then probably going to push you a little bit more than everybody else just so you get a kind of a feel for what's going on over there. Just, you know, in case you want to come back, you know what you're getting yourself into.
Uh-huh. Do you ever have people come back that are visitors?
Not very often.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah,
you know?
Not very often.
And Bryce aren't going back, you know?
And I don't blame them, dude. Like, yeah. I mean, I've went through that for years with clean, and it's definitely a specific type of training and a specific type of person that is a glutton for punishment that wants to do something like that. But like I said, I find some value in it, and there's not too many. The people that do come in, I'm probably pretty close with already from other teams, and I don't mind other teams coming in. I'm very open with that, but you just got to make it through it. You can't be the one that stops the momentum of training, because my guys are so used to it now. So if I got to baby somebody, it's not going to work out. The door's open. You're gonna have to leave. So this is how I see it, but come back the next day. I'll be nice. We'll be good. We'll get some rounds in and can rest all you want and drink as much water as you want and talk a little bit here or there. But other than that, man, Wednesday nights are very quiet and very violent.
I get that. I dig it. Do you, you know, you've had some really good results. We talked about how you're just on the Stronghold podcast.
Yeah.
You guys kind of talked about just the team's no-gi performance.
Yeah.
And for you guys, you had somebody do no-gi worlds and win at every belt level.
Yes.
And so that was a super, super cool accomplishment.
Yeah.
And so you're you guys are getting results, but do you notice any or have any specific matches that took place that made you go, oh, that was from our Wednesday night training?
Bianca's match, and as much as I hate to say it, because coaching your wife is incredibly hard.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there was a lot going on in those matches that she had to. Every one of her matches was a dogfight, and I think if we didn't push it to a certain level on certain nights, I think there was chances for her to kind of back off. She's as tough as they come, but you know, knowing what she can push herself through, I think really, like, her semifinals match was down to the wire, man. Like, she's dead tired. She just had two stomach surgeries. We just got into a car wreck the week before. Her neck is all messed up. But I think, you know, going through those hard times, really, you could see kind of clicking her with time going down, and she's down 2 points. She's able to get that two at the very end, and that one really stuck out. You know, with and Jeremy had some, it's not always the case for him, but he had some pretty tightly contested matches at Nogi Worlds, and a couple of them by ref's decision, and he's used to dominating. Like, yeah. Like today, he double-goaled at Europeans in 6 matches, 5 submissions, like just smoked everybody, but that was a tough one for him. And in between each match, we had to talk a lot about patience and letting things play through and not getting flustered too early when things aren't going your way. And, you know, on Wednesday nights, a lot of times things aren't going his way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's the same with everybody else. Like, it's going my way. I'm watching. I'm enjoying it. It's not going anybody else's way, that's for sure. And I do that on purpose. I don't want it to go their way. I want to see how they act when it's not going their way. And but Bianca's really stuck out. You know, Brooke just smoked her girls. But she's, like we were talking about before, coming from where she came from and then, you know, switching over to Master One, and that timing is just, there's something about that, man. And she just took off this year. So not so much her. She really did some damage this year, her first year at Black Belt. But Bianca, for sure, everything she went through and all the excuses she could have gave herself, and were valid excuses, man. Mm-hmm. She went through a lot, but she was willing to push when the other person wasn't. And I think that really gave her an edge. Those nights really gave her an edge.
What would you say to somebody who is looking for some type of training like that, but just does not have it at the gym that they're at?
You know, this is a reason why I do, you know, I keep an open door policy, and I do have some people that come in from all the, whether I get along with their instructor or not, doesn't really matter. If you're a good person, I'll let you know. If you're here for the right reason, you've got good intentions, I'm going to let you in there for the right reason. And I'm sure there's got to be, depending on where you live, there's got to be somewhere around town. But it's hard to say, man, because I feel like we're a little bit different. You know, I'm not very formal on how I run my gym, run my business. You know, I kind of cool with people coming in and coming out. I'm not worried about what you're wearing, what you're doing, who you're from, where you're from. I'm not into the politics of jiu-jitsu. So sometimes that stuff can get in the way, but there's got to be something somewhere, and hopefully they're open to you cross-training. Because, you know, I tell a lot of guys, since I opened my gym, I've had some people cross over and jump in with me, but I've always been very about, like, you can just come cross-train. You don't have to join my gym. You don't have to be a part of this. Like, if you want to come in Wednesday nights, that's fine. As long as you're making it through it and you're intentional and you're being a good partner and you got all those things I look for in somebody, they're more than welcome at any time. I can't say that for everybody, every gym around different towns or whatever, but I'm pretty good about keeping it open, because I think, you know, I think Vava runs something similar down there. So there's a couple of different spots in Kansas City that where you can get that kind of that style of training. And we're very open with people coming in and giving it a shot. But, you know, I can't really say that for everybody, but I know at my place, I'm really big on, like, I've had people switch over, but the very first thing I say is, like, you don't have to leave your gym. If you just want to come cross train, just come cross train. I'm not trying to pull anybody from anywhere. I want a good environment, a good vibe. I don't want any, you know, any weirdness going on in between gyms. I try to keep it as chill as possible. So hopefully somewhere around you has something like that. But it's, you know, I've been to a lot of, you know, I used to live in Florida and it wasn't quite like that. Like, you are where you are. You're wearing a certain patch. You're not allowed at certain places. And if you go to those certain places, you got to wear their stuff. Or why are you not training here? Why are you not a part of this team? And it's just like this big hassle. And it's just, I try not to do that. I try to leave it open to everybody.
When did you start implementing that?
I've always, well, Clean wasn't too much like that. Clean was, you know, Clean wanted us, if somebody came in, didn't, I'll be a blue belt, didn't care if it was a black belt, we had to try to fight him to the death. Like, we had to try to prove a point. And, you know, it kind of burned me out. I could tell it kind of burned people out around us. And so I've probably for the last 8 to 10 years, I've been pretty open on letting people come in and give it a shot. But I've always, like, I'm big on, like, if you're going to be at my gym, I want you to want to be there. If it's not a fit for you, that's all good. That's what I love about jiu-jitsu blowing up in the Midwest. Like, there's somewhere to train for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it might not be my place, and that's cool. You can come cross-train, but maybe over there it's a little bit better. That's a little bit more hobbyist. And we have a majority of my gym is hobbyist too. So, and I have plenty of classes for hobbyists, but, you know, it's not for everybody. And I understand that. And I'm glad there's so many different places to train. So if they want to come cross-train but not join up, that's cool with me. But I think... when I really started getting out of that mindset that Clean had put us in is, you know, probably 8 to 10 years ago, I think. Yeah. When I started teaching that body fit, I was a little rough around the edges then, you know, and would cause some stuff as far as like hard training goes. Somebody came in from another gym. I was a purple belt teaching around a lot of black belts. I'm like, no, this is who we are. This is what we can do for you. This kind of training. So beat the crap out of people just to like prove a point. But I don't really see the value in that much anymore. Like, you're going to get hard training at my gym. I have plenty of students that can own up to what we're about. And, you know, I just don't see the point in being an asshole all the time. Like, yeah. Like how I kind of was raised. And uh-huh. I feel it's been really beneficial, man. I've had a lot of people also, me being such a new gym 2 years in, I find a lot of value in upper belts coming in from other gyms, helping my students out. Cause although I do have a good squad of upper belts, I'm still growing. A majority of my students are new. Mm-hmm. So to have them get the outside looks is very beneficial to us. So I'm always been a big proponent of cross training, and I want my students to cross train. I want plenty of people to come if they're a good fit. You know, some people should not be there,
yeah.
But for other reasons, but I've always been big on that. I think it's a huge value to cross train and have other people come in your gym. So I try to keep the doors open as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. That's something that when I started my gym in 2015, that was the, like, man, I want to just have cross training all the yeah. time. You know, I want to, it's the only way as a purple belt that wasn't able to make it to Kyle's as much yeah. and just didn't have any access to any other adult purple belts.
Yep.
It was like the only way to get better.
So that, yeah, we're kind of on the same mind frame there. I was the same, like right around when I was a purple belt is when I really started to open up to that, because mine Clean wasn't around much. He had just had a kid and he couldn't travel in as much, and he was only living around us for about a year. And then after that, he would fly in when he could, and he'd stay for 7 to 10 days, and they'd be incredibly hard and terrible. And that's how you break your neck and all that good stuff. But you need these different looks, especially if you're competing, man. If you're training with the same guys, and I had a great group of people, and we'd experiment and try different things, but having a different look come in is always going to be beneficial. Mm-hmm. Seeing something different, seeing a different style, being in a room with somebody that does things differently is always going to be beneficial. So I've always tried to be open to that.
Hey guys, Josh here. Just wanted to interrupt today's podcast really quick and tell you guys about something really fun we have on our YouTube channel. So currently we're listening to my interview with Devin Parada, and I just got to teach a seminar at Devin Parada's gym, and we turned it into one of our episodes of the dog vlog. And on that episode, I teach chest over chest passing. I get to train with their guys. I get to do a bunch of Q&A, and you get to hear what Jeff's opinions of me are at the end of the episode. So there's a lot of great reasons to listen to that episode. But instead of pushing a course or an ebook in today's commercial, I just wanted to tell you guys to check that episode out. If you like hearing from Devin, you'll love to get to see his gym. You will love to get to just hear the conversations between us, his perspective, and you also will love some free chest over chest guard passing. And so that's all I have for you. I'll stop interrupting this episode, and I will talk to you again at the end of today's episode. Are there ever times that the open door policy doesn't work and you gotta beat somebody down?
Yeah, early on, before, I think I have a little bit of a reputation in Kansas City now with a lot of the gyms, and they tell their instructor they're gonna come cross train. I think they get a kind of vibe for what's, you know, what we're about. And but yeah, early on.
Do you think
on,
their instructor's just like, don't?
Yeah.
Don't,
I mean,
do
I think
it.
I think a lot of them are like, just if you do go, be careful. But they're probably, because we had that reputation of how Clean kind of built this up for mm-hmm. years. And it's always like, we were kind of the redheaded stepchilds of Kansas City. And all we did was try to hurt them, which we never did. We just trained hard. Mm-hmm. We just trained differently than everybody else. And most gyms around there were like, come in whenever you want, leave whenever you want, drill if you want to, talk if you want to, do all this stuff. And we were never allowed to talk. If you showed up late, burpees or leapovers, 100 leapovers, we asked to get a drink of water too early. It was 100 leapovers, dude. So I think that's what a lot of people thought about us, you know, for the longest time. And I did my best to try to, I mean, keep the intensity at a certain point, but make sure that's like, that's not what it's about. Like, you're not going to, unless you do something wrong, you're not going to get killed over here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've had people come in that had to be dealt with, and not reasons to do with jiu-jitsu. It could be their attitude or who they were. But I haven't had to do that in a long time. I feel like people know who me and David are now around that area, and kind of built that reputation of, we're just about being productive with our time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not there to waste time, man. I have so many students that have so many different goals, and being on time and doing the work is just really big to me. And if you're not about that, it's probably not going to work out. So, and I'm very open about that. Mm-hmm.
What do you look at? Do you have any kind of goals or plans for the coming years for your team?
I just, every year that passes by, I just want to keep building on what we're doing. I don't, like, there's certain goals I set specifically, but really I just keeping the culture and what we're building on. We're having such a good success already, being 2 years into my own gym. I just, each year that goes by, I'm just like, just continue to do what we're doing. But when things need to be adjusted, I just got to be ready to adjust. But really, not really any goals. I just want that culture to stay the same. Like, there's certain things I ask of my competitors. There's certain, like, if you're going to compete, whether it's at a Fuji or an IBJJF, like, there's got to be some sacrifice there. There's got to be, you know, I ask, you know, 5 or 6 weeks out, let's get on a schedule. Not someone, like, I don't care about their accolades personally. For me, it'd be like, oh, I've raised world champions, or I've raised this or that. Like, if you're paying to come to my gym, I want you to get the most out of yourself. You're going to compete. I've competed a lot, and I've competed a lot of times to where I just wasn't prepared or doing the right things. And I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to think you're doing the right things and learn things the hard way. So I try to do the best I can to use my experience for my students to make sure they're doing things the right way. So there's certain things I ask for them to sacrifice and do, but I don't ask that year round. I just want to keep building on our success already. And I just want to, there's certain things that I ask of them, things like that, like just the sacrifice and being there on time and showing up when you're supposed to show up and putting in the best effort you can and being intentional about your time, and things will work out. So as long as we keep that culture, I really don't set any, like, I really want them to set goals, and I do the best I can to facilitate whatever needs to be done to make sure they reach those goals. And that's really all I care about. Nothing personal, but more so for the team and their goals is all I really care about.
That makes sense. Where do you see the team getting one day? Being or you know, what do you see kind of as the future, you know, just your future unfolds as, what do you see the team being like for you?
I love the culture we have now, and I really don't think too much, as bad as that sounds, I really don't think too much into the future. I just take it day by day, and as long as everything feels like it's going right, I just keep building on it. I don't like have any kind of amount of students goals, or I need to have this amount of students, or I need to have these people competing here and this amount of world champions. Like, it's more so person by person base. It's what they want. And that's really just, I just think about that in that moment. I really don't, honestly, I don't have any like set expectations or goals. You know, I'm just very grateful for what we have now. You know, I didn't think I'd be here to where I'd have a gym. You know, it's always been a thought in my mind, and then it was here, and now it's running, and just had my 2 year anniversary, and it's been awesome. And I think there's just something for me. I know a lot of people like to have things planned out and things like, this is how it's got to be. And it's like, I've just never been that way. I kind of fly by the seat of my pants and adjust when I need to adjust. So I can't say that I have any, like, what I think is going to be in the future. I just love how it's going now. And if we can just continue that, I'm cool. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I love what we got going on. It's been an awesome 2 years since I've opened the gym, and we're doing something right, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm guessing, and, you know, a lot of trial and error and figuring things out. But I try to use my past experience as much as I can to help them out and continue experience and continue to train and try to stay relevant, to do the best I can to help them out. But as far as goals go, I really, really don't. I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll find out at the same time. Uh-huh. I don't know where it's gonna go, but just keep doing what we're doing, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So for you, after, you know, you really competed a lot, mm-hmm. and trained a lot, just did a lot of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
After you did that, you know, you start to go into, okay, I'm a coach now. I'll still compete when I can. I still train.
Yeah.
But like, primary focus is to be a coach.
Yeah.
Was that a hard transition for you, going from the athlete to the coach?
Honestly, it hasn't been that hard, because I know I keep talking about clean, but I think clean set these high expectations for me to be a world champion and a pan champion and all this stuff, and was very adamant about the way I trained and everything I did. And I, you know, I just, how do I explain this the best way? I just want to facilitate the best training room I can for these people. I don't, after switching over from competing, I really just competed to show them what somebody could be capable of, even though I wasn't like, I never really won. I won Pans, but at Master One, I didn't like, I medaled at Pans at Brown Belt Adult. I won it at Master One. I just chased these things just to show, because I didn't really have a team. I didn't really have like this big team. I wasn't a part of any kind of art with clean. It was a very small team, you know, 5 or 6 regular guys really. And I just really competed to show people what you could do without having to move to the coast, without having to, you know, having to jump on an Atos or a Gracie Baja or anything like that. I felt like what we were doing, whether I had success or not, I always felt like we were kind of on the right path, because I kept chasing and I used experience as my teacher for the longest time. But it wasn't a really hard transition for me to go from a athlete to a coach, because I think was probably, you know, looking back, my main focus was to one day open a gym. And I've always been big on, like, if I'm going to be in front of you on a Wednesday night screaming at you, like, you better have known I've done it too. Mm-hmm. You better, like, you're going to respect a little bit more knowing where I came from. Mm-hmm. So pushing myself to compete as much as I did was never really, I don't think it was ever really a personal thing. I just knew one day I wanted to give back to my community and open a gym. And I know I wanted to learn from a guy that had been there and done that. So I might as well have been there and done that. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I compete now, I think it's a little bit more personal, because I don't compete that much anymore. So it's just for me to be like, see what I can do now. See if I can still get after it and see if I can still ramp it up and do all these things I preach. You know, this last one I did a couple months ago, I will say it was good for me, but I had so many new students that had never seen me compete. And, you know, you get that a lot. Like, hey, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? I was like, you know, I've had my time. I'll mm-hmm. do it when I want to do it. And you hear that enough, I'm like, all right, let's do it. Uh-huh. Let's do it. And we're going to pack it out. I had like 70 people there. Uh-huh. It was wild in there. It was loud and I loved every minute of it. But just to like, it was for them, you know, like it was just like, just to watch me go through it as a coach, I think is very valuable to be there with these students and be on the same plane as them, not to be held up on a pedestal as far as a coach goes. Like, everything I'm telling you guys to do, I'll do it too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's always was my goal. So switching out of it was never really, it's been kind of a relief, to be honest with you, to kind of pull back. And because I competed a lot for a lot of years, and a lot of it was due to clean wanting me to win this stuff. And then after, you know, clean had moved back and I didn't get to talk to him as much, I kind of started switching my focus. And I think that's when I started winning a little bit more. It wasn't so much like, I had to do this. I have to win. I have to, because this is what he wants. It was more so like, what do I want? And what do I want to, like, what do I want to have behind my name? Or what do, whenever I open a gym, like, what kind of stories do I want to tell? Or what kind of experience do I want to have? I want to give back to somebody. So that's really what pushed it. So it wasn't ever like, to be honest, I don't really enjoy competing that much. I really don't. Like, I enjoyed fighting when I was younger, but competing in jiu-jitsu was never really like, I never fully really cared for it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And now it's, yeah, it wasn't that hard. It really wasn't that hard. And I'll still compete here and there. You know, I'll still jump out there, but it's probably more so if something I want to get up for, but also like, you know, if they ask me enough, I'm going to do it. Uh-huh. I get a lot of my kids' class, man, there. And I had a lot of kids there at that last one. It's just seeing the spark in them when I do something like that and go out there and compete, whether I win or lose, it's not a big thing for me. I can't control that. So I just want to go out there and give my best effort and show them that what you could be capable of. You put the work in and do the right things and, you know, focus on something, focus on the task at hand, what you can make of yourself. So that's really, but as far as, I know that was a long answer, as far as transitioning from athlete to coach was not that hard for me.
But it's also too, like, kind of how you were saying, it's not just like, hey, I'm willing to go through this too, but I also believe in the system enough that I would trust it to guide me too. And that's like,
that's big.
That's the biggest difference, is you have a lot of coaches that don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But they're just like, oh, well, I mean, it's you. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to go out there and compete and prove this idea.
Yeah.
And when you train a little differently and you teach a little differently or whatever, and you go, man, I have to show my guys that this works and that I believe in it. I have faith in it.
I think that's the biggest part, is like, like I said, if you're gonna talk the talk, I've just never been interested in people that will tell you to do something but never done it themselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to listen to people like that. And I've never got that vibe from my students. I've never had anybody say, oh, well, you're not doing that. They'll just ask me if I'm competing or something like that, or they want to see me compete. But I've never got that vibe. That's just something personal to me, I guess. It's like, well, what I want out of a coach, somebody that's walking in with a cheeseburger, teaching out of a book, you know, which I've had a coach like that. I've had a coach walk in with teaching out of a Hoyler Gracie book 30 minutes late with a Wendy's cheeseburger in his hand. He's like, I think we'll do this today. And over time, I'm like, I don't think this is going to work out, man. Yeah. Like, this isn't what I'm looking for. So really just how I looked at it was, if I'm going to sit up there and scream and push through people through what I push them through, you know, I did that for years with clean. And I just, if I'm going to talk about it, I should have walked it first.
Yeah. Do you think back to that time at all and just be like, man, that was crazy?
Dude, every time I wake up and try to get out of bed, think about how it was just, yeah. But in the moment, honestly, like, Clean was a God to me, and everything he would ask me to do, I would do it. Uh-huh. You know, there wasn't, you know, we weren't fortunate enough to have black belts all over the place and all these different looks. Like, Clean was the guy for the longest time, and whatever he'd say to do, I would do it. Didn't matter what it was, and a lot of it was probably detrimental to my health and to my jiu-jitsu, and I probably didn't get better at jiu-jitsu during it, but I got tough, I guess. But, yeah, it was a lot of it, man. I was telling a story the other day about, you know, I would say Clean moved back to Florida, and he'd come in for 7 days at a time. We'd train every day, at least 8 hours, sometimes 12 hours. We'd get a little bit break in between. But everything was hard, and it would get to the point to where when I went to take my gi off, it would be stuck in my skin. Like, you know how people get, like, bed sores from laying in bed too long or at a hospital? I'd have to peel it off, and there'd be, like, holes in my skin from the sweat from using the same gi for eight hours. You know what I'm saying? And just the drilling. You've been around Clean before. Mm-hmm. You know how he is. Like, everything's got to be – every rep's got to be 100%. You got to dang near choke somebody to sleep every single time for doing triangle chokes. Somebody's going to sleep no matter what. That's his forte. Somebody's passing out. The whole not tap early thing, I'm like, I'm trying not to die, man. It's not tapping out of convenience. I'm tapping because, you know, I'm talking to God. You know? So, yeah, there's a lot of it that was benefit, but most of it was crazy, man. And that's why, you know, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours on a Wednesday night, I'll kind of give them a glimpse of what that is. But I'm not going to, man, that was... If there was other options around town and I, like, kind of played around a little bit, like, oh, this is what jiu-jitsu is supposed to be like, maybe I'll go over here. But Clean was the guy, and, you know, he had a stronghold on me. And, you know, but, you know, I say that stuff like it in a fully negative light. There was a lot of positives of that, too. Of course. You know, I got so much from him, and very thankful for my time with him. And, you know, he taught me a lot of life lessons outside of that. And I think maybe that's what he was really trying to do, is maybe grow into a man. You know, I didn't have my dad around, and I think maybe he knew that, and he was just maybe being a little extra tough on me. But, you know, I was the one that committed all my time to him. So he had all these expectations on me. And it was just, yeah, I try not to, I don't want people to feel how I felt, but I also want them to get a glimpse of what I had to go through at the same time. Just a little taste, but not all of it, because, you know, I'd have two people at my gym. So, and I just wanted to be productive. So yeah, most of it was crazy, man. Most of it is not doable nowadays. Mm-hmm. No way.
Yeah. And that's like, you don't even see anybody at all that trains that way anymore.
No.
You know?
Not at all. Yeah.
You didn't really see anybody then that trained that way.
The door was revolving, man. Like, there'd be a lot of guys that came in for one that get a little taste of it, and I'd never even talk to them again. You know, they'd probably block us on Facebook after what we went through in that room. So, or never want to talk or even see me in person again. So, yeah, it was wild times, man. But back then, that's all we knew. So that's just what I did. But I'm glad I went through it so I can kind of get that side of it and then try to introduce a new side of it and try to find what works best. Is really what I'm trying to navigate all the time, is, like I said, a lot of trial and error and see what fits and try to get rid of what doesn't and try to compound what does. Mm-hmm.
If you had to give me a ballpark, how many times you get put to sleep in your jiu-jitsu career, how many times have you been choked unconscious? Because in drilling, I know that's something people always will talk about with Clean. It's like, oh yeah, he would put people to sleep in drilling all the time.
I could give you a separate number for drilling, a separate number for live training with Clean.
Give me it.
I'll give one instance to where I got vertigo from getting put to sleep four times by him in one training session. It was the day after he gave me a blue belt. And it was like a 30-minute or 45-minute round. I went to sleep four times. I remember the owner of the gym coming in, because I'm waking up screaming, thinking I'm getting like my body's convulsing. And the guy walks in and cleans, like, shut the door, he's fine.
Oh,
and then I get back up, you know, you get that shaky feeling, I'd recover, and then I'm back out. And there was one time he choked me to sleep, like right on the edge of going to sleep two or three times, showing like a bread cutter. But I was just like, he knows what he's doing. He's got the pressure. And he's like, and then I'll start talking to the technique. I'm like, here we go. Like, yep. If I tap, I'm getting chastised. So time to take a nap.
Yeah.
Ballpark, just from clean alone, probably 30 to 50 times just from him alone. Like, training-wise, he put me to sleep quite a bit, like, showing something on me. He knew I went and tap early. So, like, we go do travel and do seminars, and we do, like, his choke that he hit on Marcelo that – forget what he calls it, where he does it with one hand, uh-huh. Which makes it even worse because he's not pulling the other collar. So he's just chilling with the craziest grip you can have, and he's applying pressure all the time. He's like, I'm not even using this hand. I'm like, just do something with that hand. somebody come help me out. I'm about to die right now. And if I went to sleep too many times, he'd be like, all right, out of here. Somebody else comes in. He put them to sleep at least once. He's like, everybody got it. Everybody's like, I got to go. That's what I got. Like, yeah. I got it. Like, this is what the seminar is going to be about. It's time to go, man. But... oh, man, a lot of times, like, too many, man. My mom, her at the gym that I'm at cleaning was like a mile away, and I just moved into an apartment at a time. And in between those sessions, there was one time I went to my mom's house because there's no way I was going to be able to drive. Everything was spinning, and I fell asleep in a hallway. Like, she's like trying to wake up. I was like, Mom, just leave me. Like, I'm not getting up. Like, the room's spinning. I got one eye. It's like closing in and out. I'm like, and I got to be back in an hour for six more hours of this. So I'm like, just dump some water on me in about an hour. Get me up, get me in my car and send me on my way. But it was, yeah, man, it was brutal to say the least. And a lot of times I went to sleep. Now I tap early, man. I'm not afraid to say it. Somebody starts choking me, I'm like, I'm out, right? Hey, that's it, we're done. I'm not trying to go back to sleep. Start having nightmares in the middle of the round, flashbacks.
Bro, you know that there are people that get to purple belt, even brown belt nowadays. I don't want to say black, but I would guess even black.
Oh, yeah.
Without getting ever put to sleep.
Yeah. You should try it one time.
I mean,
see how it feels.
Yeah, come on. You can't not ever get put to sleep.
There's been some times, man. I woke
50
up.
50's excessive.
It's a lot.
I'm gonna give you that.
I'm gonna have some issues later on in life.
Yeah.
You know, most people get concussions. I just got shut off. My lights got shut off from going to sleep so many times that probably gonna have some issues later on in life. I might have issues now. Who knows? Probably do have a lot of issues right now because of it. But yeah, man. Like, there's sometimes I've been put to sleep. There was one specifically to where I remember, like, I probably was asleep from, you know, 5 to 10 seconds, but I had like 30 dreams. And I remember waking up the Subway, Eat Fresh, and I wake up and I pop up and he's like, you want some breakfast? Everybody's staring at you, think you're in your room. And he's like, eggs and bacon, like talking about that. I'm like, what's everybody doing in my room? But sometimes, man, it's super refreshing. So you got to try it once.
That's true. I agree. There are times that it's not as bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You wake up like somebody had got choked to sleep not too long ago on accident in the room. I think somebody's running a clock choke and they were trying to tap and couldn't find the guy. And he woke up and he's like, at first I went to sleep, he's like, I feel good. He's like, man, I think the rest of the day is going to go great. Like, it's like a quick, you know, like, take like a little 5-minute power nap. You wake up, you're like, oh, man, the day's going great. Sometimes you get choked to sleep and it's refreshing. But yeah, not four times in a row, I'll tell you that. When you go all the way out and you're having a seizure.
Yeah, yeah, that's not ideal.
Beneficial.
Yeah. 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 Bryce, you ever been put to sleep?
Jeremy Cameron.
All right. Good.
I was going to say, good. There's mats right here. Just
yep, well, yeah. Yeah. Have Devin show a move. Yeah. I'm like, hey, Bryce, how about you, Uki, man?
I'll talk you through it.
That'll be perfect. I think that would be. Bryce has not really gotten any hate in this episode at all. He's just been over there eating his tacos, bro. And
smelling too. Yeah. You might puke him up if I put you to sleep right now.
That would
We'll have an outtake after this episode of you waking up.
Oh, man.
My man.
That's a good amount of tacos, bro.
Those from Pontoon Beach, or are they from here?
Oh,
can't be that good, huh?
So, first experience. I know you're only an hour in, but first experience being in Granite City, man. You know, because that's, you already know that, like, Pontoon Beach people think they're better than everybody.
From what I understand.
And so you've been very anti Pontoon Beach as soon as I told you about it, bro. Yeah.
Well, I'm from a town that's just like you're like, hey, welcome to Granite City, because I was staying in Granite City. I'm driving around, went to the Walmart here, grabbed some stuff. I'm like, I feel at home, bro.
Yeah.
This is my kind of people. I'm getting tacos from here tonight, not Pontoon Beach. I'll say that.
Oh, yeah, bro.
I'm going to hang out on the street corners later on. Man, I'm going to make some friends tonight, so I feel good about
it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do that. I would go to bed. I would go to bed at nighttime. Yo, you got a seminar to teach tomorrow. You want to stay?
That's true.
You want to stay after?
Maybe I'll come back. I'll revisit and maybe I'll have some fun later on. But maybe tonight I'll keep it chill.
Yeah, man, it's a great place.
Yeah, I like it. I'm not lying. It reminds me of home.
Yeah, just wait till you get to meet my students tomorrow. You're gonna Pumped. Be like. You're gonna be like these are the guys.
Fit right in.
These are the guys I expected them to be.
Yeah.
You know, this is exactly what I anticipated.
I love it, man. I've always grown up in grew up in a lot of trailer parks, man. Grew up in a lot of weird places, a lot of drugs around me. So it's just I feel it, man. Pulled in, I was like, this is my kind of place, man.
Yep, this is the place.
This is I'm excited to be here.
You're like, I like how the sign for Head Nod HQ is literally just screwed into the side of the building.
Love it.
You know, and then like, and it's very small and there's just no other indication.
Yeah.
It's like, is this it?
That's I was like, oh, there it is. All right. Yeah. Man. Didn't get a bad vibe at all. I was like, oh, this is my type of place, dude. I love it.
We actually, like you pointed out, we did start in Pontoon Beach, and we actually had an apartment. Did you ever go to that gym? Did you ever see that gym?
This is my first time being over on this, any one of your actual, the Head Nod Squad or anything. This is the first time I've been over here.
I didn't know. Well, so in the old gym, it was an apartment, and we tore everything out and put mats in it. And it was like we had 700 square feet of mats, and we would have 42 people rolling live on those mats. But then we moved to Granite.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. We went the space, the per square foot really worked better in Granite.
You saw my first gym. It's kind of, I guess, kind of similar to that. And like, I don't know, it just felt like I'm in a bigger gym now, and don't get me wrong, I love it, but there's something homey about it. I don't know, man. There's something different about not having, being in a nice, like everything's beautiful. Like you walk into some of these gyms, like state of the art all over the wall and all this, all the computers and everything, like the brand new couches and all this stuff and plants everywhere. I'm like, I'm kind of weird in here, bro.
There is this expectation that in a jiu-jitsu school, it has to feel professional.
Yeah.
And to me, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're here to learn jiu-jitsu. You're here to get good at jiu-jitsu.
Yep.
If you're not here for that, what are you doing here?
Yeah. All this extra stuff is just for show, man. Like the mats that we came up on were like, you know, those thicker puzzle mats now. Well, we had the ones that you can buy from Walmart and were covered in staff. I don't know how many times I got staff from them because it's like they're so porous, you can't really clean them. And back in the day, nobody cared about cleaning anything, including themselves. But yeah, I don't know. There's something about coming from, I don't know. There's something, I enjoy it, man. I enjoy, like I want to keep a professional setting in my gym. So my gym isn't crazy like that anymore. But when I had that first gym, like, it's going to have a soft spot in my heart, dude. Just, you walk in, you take two steps, you're on mats.
Yep.
You're in a hallway. There's nowhere, like, if you want to go to the bathroom, better take your shoes off because there's nothing but mats. And there's not, like, I think we had 600 square foot of mats in that place. And we'd have kids in the back in the changing room because there's nowhere other place for them to go. Had a small desk up front, little couch. But other than that, it's like, I'm over here to do jiu-jitsu. We got space. We got enough space. We got to work in threes. That's fine. That's cool. We'll make it happen. I don't care where we're at. We're going to make it happen. We don't have to have all this nice stuff.
What's so much fun too is like that will be a memory for your guys. People will be like, because people still will talk about like, wait, did you train in the blue room? Like, no, I haven't been training yet, you know, because we moved in like about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so at this point, people are like, you know, there's only a group of guys that were at the old place. We're like, yeah, we trained in that apartment, on wrestling mats just rolled on the ground. Yeah. And now everybody has a subfloor. And you know, everybody has really nice mats. Yeah. And it's like, there's just something fun about.
But they'll bring it up and be happy about it. They'll bring it up and talk about the good times you used to have. There's something cool about those vibes. I don't know. When we first competed against each other, I think 2016-ish, my buddy had this place. We called it the barn. And the only way you knew we were there, we put an axe in the tree up front. It was like in the middle of a neighborhood. It wasn't a store for anything like that. It was just like an old storage unit. And we trained in the attic. And in the summertime, it'd be like 120 degrees. Like somebody was about to die every single time. There's blood all over the ceiling because it's an attic. So if you stand up, you're cracking your head open. But there, man, the people that knew about it, people talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. And they're just like have these great stories about it. And I love it, man. I mean, this would do for me. I'd make it work. You know what I'm saying? Just small mat area. Doesn't have to be here to teach and do jiu-jitsu. I don't care what gi you wear. I don't care. I mean, the hygiene's got to be right. Obviously, like I don't want somebody that's wearing the same gi 5 days in a row and didn't wash it. Like there's certain things that you got to uphold. But as far as like, as long as you got mats, I don't care where it's at. We'll make it happen. I don't need all this extra fancy stuff, which is, and I don't want to say that I'm talking bad on those kind of gyms or things that have all this.
Of course not. We love Kyle Watson.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
We love Watson Martial Arts.
I was like, I didn't get to.
We're jealous.
See the blue room, but I got spoiled at Kyle's, man.
Uh huh. Oh yeah.
Kyle's got it all. I'm like, all right, man, you got a mall here. That's cool.
Yeah, this is the spot, huh?
Train here. I train upstairs. I train in your office. I train over here. I got showers everywhere. I got vending machines. Got all this cool stuff. I'm like, all right, Kyle.
A bunch of passive aggressive signs throughout the building. Yeah. Like, stop doing whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Not allowed here.
Keep it clean. I almost feel like, you know, you and I had met before, uh-huh. But I almost feel like that tournament, that new breed in 2016, I want to say that was kind of the thing we bonded over, was you were talking about like, yeah, this is what my training is right now. We train in this place called The Barn. And I was like, dude, I'm just moved out of the Jiu-Jitsu garage, which was my, you know what I mean? Which was where we trained before Head Nod was a thing.
Yeah.
And so it was that same idea of like, yeah, we just had a small room and just want to get better, you know?
That definitely had something that kind of drawn me to you specifically, to your guys. But other than the fact that you beat the crap out of me 2 years in a row, I'll never forget them.
I was on steroids.
2016 and 2017. 2017, I had a way better run a new breed. Still lost to Josh, man. Still got smoked by Josh. But that first year, dude, I mean, you were focused on your own thing. But that first year, the only person I beat that day, I was a brown belt, new brown belt. Only beat a white belt. Lost to a blue, purple, brown, and black belt that day.
Oof.
Only beat a white belt. And I smoked this white belt just to save a little bit of myself and like 30 seconds of the guillotine. And even that was hard.
Uh-huh.
But dude, I got ran. And that was like, that also kind of was a real eye-opening experience competing against you that day, Ezra. His blue belt, Luke. Luke Elders, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dude, he was my first round of the open. And I'm like, oh, it's a blue belt. I'm going to get warmed up. And then I'm stalking to Kimura. Mm-hmm. Like 30 seconds, I'm like, guess I'm warmed up now. Huh? Uh-huh. I just got smoked. I kind of set the tone for the rest of the day. That next year, had a great run until I met you in the finals. But, I mean, it's to be expected. I mean, you were still on a different level than me. And that's something that I strive to be, training with you guys and being in a room with you, Nick, Junior, all you guys. You guys are – I look at you guys as – I mean, you guys are something where I want to be. Like, that's why – I've really enjoyed being on this team. It's just – the way you guys operate and the way you guys act with each other, the team, just everything you guys do, man, is something I really try to emulate with my own team. And just being around you guys always makes me better. So, and competing against you in that first tournament, you know, I hired a mental coach after that. I hired a mental, like going from 2016 to 2017, I was like, it could be the trade, could be something like, I just didn't believe I belonged to be in there with you, mm-hmm. you know, at both times. Like even when I had to run the second year, I was like, it's Josh, man. I mean, what you did to me last year, there's something in my mind. I'm like, do I deserve to even beat this guy? Mm-hmm. And I had to like try to work myself through that. You know what I'm saying? Whether it would have worked out or not, going out there already being like, oh, I don't know. Uh-huh. You know? And you're like, oh, I know.
Uh-huh.
I know. I know.
I'm going on offense now. You're
like, yeah, you had an easy day that day. That's for sure with me. So, but I'm, you know, very valuable experiences for me and something that I would never give up. Days like that, I would never give up because without days like that, I mean, you got to eat crap, man, to really get a taste for what it's like to have success. Like you got to have days like that. I know I needed days like that. And you know, I appreciate those days for sure.
Dude. And what's crazy about that event when you start naming, cause I lost to Ezra same tournament and we were all starting to train together.
Yeah.
And it was just like a bunch of the St. Louis guys were like starting to get together sometimes. And really that really for our part of tag team, you know, that really was the beginning stages of it. Just that crew being together and being like, okay, these are the guys, you know, we've all went through a generation of jiu-jitsu. These are the guys still here. Let's see what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see that and it's just, it's weird because, you know, like, when I see your gi at the invitational that we were just talking about that says I'm not here to make friends, right? And but I also look at like there are certain people that you're like, this is my guy. I want this guy on my team. I want this guy with me. What are your defining characteristics of that?
There's just a certain vibe, man. It's kind of hard because like the way you got like. Take that new breed, for instance. Like, Nick was always been super cool with me, and he has a team. he had like an affiliation down in Joplin where I'm from, and I trained with Nick a little bit there. But say, take that new breed, for example, like how you're kind of talking, the team was kind of coming together. You're already training with Ezra. He's not a part of the team. Nick was there. You're still with Voggy. But mm-hmm. just like the way you guys just kind of meshed off each other and worked with each other, like there was something so cool about that, because in Kansas City, it wasn't quite like that. Like the higher level guys, they didn't really get to, like, we would try to make it happen. There was a small group. We called it the Outsiders, just because of the guys that actually get together and try to make each other better. And that was feeling that and then seeing you guys do that. And like, there's just people that can put the patch aside and just have a common goal and really help each other out to get better, because, you know, we are from the Midwest, and I think we're plenty caught up or catching up now, but I felt like it was us versus the coast always. Mm-hmm. Like, so seeing you guys come together and just your attitude about training, and you guys still had that same attitude, kind of like I did with clean, but you knew, like, you had the other side of it. You knew when to pull back. It's kind of hard to explain. Like, it was just a certain vibe that you guys had. Mm-hmm. And I remember specifically when me and David talked about, and I may have talked about this on the other podcast, but just to rehash it, like, if I were to skip on from clean, because I'm a very loyal guy, I was very loyal to him to a fault almost. If there was any other team, and immediately I thought about you guys. Mm-hmm. Just, and this is, I think Nick had just joined on. He had just, mm-hmm. and this is before Revive had even opened. Nick had just joined on. I'd see your guys' room, and I'd see the guys that were in that room. And a lot of them, like, there was a Gracie Baja. I think that Jeff guy was a Gracie Baja mm-hmm. guy. Ezra was his own thing. Nick was his own thing. You and Kyle were your own thing. But just, like, you had a common goal, and you guys were able to put all that other stuff aside, which is hard for a lot of teams to do, mm-hmm. to get better, knowing that we may compete against each other, but in that moment, it didn't really matter. You just wanted to get better at jiu-jitsu and figure this thing out. And just the vibe that I want to be around people like that, that are, you know, good people, have the same intentions, and they're to make each other better. It's not, in those moments, it's not about competition. It's about growing mm-hmm. as a person and growing in jiu-jitsu. And you guys just have this vibe about you that it's hard to explain, but that's kind of what it is. It's like the way you guys welcome me in, like, you know, I don't, not to talk crap about Brazilian teams, but if I were to look, I don't feel like it's not the same. I don't know. There's something about the Midwest and the guys around here. Mm-hmm. You know, I get that same vibe from guys like John Gutta and, you know, the guys that are up north in Iowa. Like, I feel like we all kind of came up the same way a little bit mm-hmm. in a certain way. So we all kind of respect that about each other, and we're willing to give back to each other because of that. And I'm like a sponge, man, because I feel like you guys were way ahead of my time. And to be in a room like that is just, like, selfishly so beneficial to me. But just how you guys went about it, and the training was hard. The training was intentional, but we could talk afterwards. It wasn't like, hey, how'd you do this? You know, I've been in rooms before, like when I trained down in Florida at Pablo's, like, there wasn't much of that. It's, you took your ass whooping and moved on. There wasn't no questions to be asked. Like, hey, you want to get good? Keep taking your ass whooping. You'll figure mm-hmm. it out. That's kind of how clean was. Like, I remember Ezra, I went down and trained an American Top Team when I was a white belt, and Ezra and Zach were purple belts at the time. And Ezra had hit this sweet move on some knee bar entry. And I remember asking Clean, he's like, your time will come. Don't worry about this. I'm like, you can't just give me a glimpse. Like, show me something. Like, I feel like that could halt the progress a little bit. Maybe mm-hmm. it could have been too advanced for me, but at least let me know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, at least give me some sort of insight there instead of having to find out the hard way. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're still training hard, doing things hard, but just the community and the bond that you guys had, which is, there's just a certain vibe that's, maybe I'm just too dumb to explain. I don't know. Maybe I've been choked to sleep too many times. Those words have left my mind. But I don't know. There's just a certain feeling I get when I'm around this. I feel like I have a good marker. I've been around a lot of great people. I've been around a lot of terrible people. Mm-hmm. And that I just could feel, you know. There's some feeling about it, and wish I could explain it better than that. But just the vibe that you guys had just clicked, man. And it was a no-brainer when it was time to, like, if I'm going to do this, if you guys would have me. And I just loved the process of getting on. Mm-hmm. Just like, it wasn't, oh yeah, you're welcome. Like, I had to have that talk with you guys, and uh-huh. you guys had to decide whether I was worth it. And I was like, I respected that so much. I'm like, if they were to come back to me and be like, hey, it wasn't a fit, I would have been like, man, that's awesome. Like, uh-huh. Like the way you guys went about it was super chill. But then when I got the green light to come on, just how welcoming everything was. Like, there's just a vibe about you guys and certain people. And I find people like this all over the place. Like, mm-hmm. you'll feel that vibe, but a lot of times you can kind of tell that's not the vibe. Uh-huh. Like, you're not very welcome at certain places. You're not very welcome to ask certain questions. You're there for the picture with the guy. Don't ask him questions. You know what I'm saying? There's just secrets or who knows, man. It's all, there's no secrets now. There's so many instructionals, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
There's certain vibes that it's like, you could just feel when you're in the right spot. Mm-hmm. And I just felt a certain way about you guys, even after all that ass whoopings you guys gave me in tournaments, man. It's like, I need that. I need to be that. I want to do that to somebody else. I want to be at your level. I want to, like, how else do I do that? I want to go be with you guys. I need to be in a room like that. I need to, but also how you guys facilitated that and welcomed me in and were able to show me certain things when, instead of being like, oh, your time will come. I'll keep training, keep pushing. Like, it was never like that. And I really enjoyed that about you guys and people like that in general.
Man, that's something that I think about with our, you know, and I think that maybe, I don't know, I could be wrong. Maybe I think it's becoming more commonplace to for people to be willing to train together and stuff. But in, like you said, in some places it's still not.
Yeah.
And for us, it was this, you know, just that crew got together and it was like we all just were tired of losing to the people we were losing to.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, we're not even in the same division, so who cares? Let's just all start, you know, and of course, like we said, we were all doing the same tournaments, sometimes doing the same divisions. But it was just that, like, that difference in mentality that it was like, okay, you could choose, we could all choose to try to be the best guy in St. Louis, or we could all try to push each other to be the best guy internationally.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, you know, even with what you're doing with Charlie right now, you know, you guys aren't the same affiliation.
No.
You know, and tag team's huge on not letting people cross train, bro. That's actually why you're here.
Yeah.
They wanted me to bring it up, you know. But just what you're doing with him, like doing that is, it's so beneficial for you guys, so beneficial for both teams.
Yeah.
You know, you get those reps against guys that they all play a certain thing.
Yeah.
You never, you know what I mean? It's like when my guys, I remember when we started consistently just getting to train at Watson's more with my first kind of batch of students, they were like, oh man, I can't deal with this leg we've passed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I never really did it at the time. That wasn't something I was really doing a lot. And all Kyle's guys, that was one of their main passes.
Yep.
And so it was such a, you know what I mean? It was such a big opening thing where now our guys have something to work.
Yep.
And they have a good group. They have a good test size that's good at it.
Yep.
And I can go, okay, well, I'm starting to beat this, or I'm not beating this right now. I'm not able to deal with this still.
Yeah. I think that's really like what you're saying with what we're doing with Charlie. Like, he's Kyle Terra. We're a tag team. But, you know, I've known Charlie since we were white or blue belts, man, and our friendship kind of goes outside of the teams. And knowing that our team still might compete against each other, that's fine, that's all good and great. But, you know, we have these common goals and we're like-minded people and we're willing to put that aside to get better. And I think that's huge. And you're right, I think it's getting a little bit more acceptable nowadays. But when I was coming up, it really wasn't. You know, there's times I would show up and you could just tell that I wasn't welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd find out the hard way. And it's just, I don't know. I think, you know, coming back to Ezra was with Clean quite a bit. I know he was under Kiko, but Clean was there quite a bit, and Clean had a certain style. But after competing against Ezra or training with Ezra, if Clean was in the room, I could and he would be open to me, and I'd be like, all right, dude, this is awesome. Like, not everybody's like this. Not everybody's like Clean. But, you know, when I came up, it was cool. Probably more like that than it wasn't.
Yeah.
But every now and then you find these outliers, like, man, I'll help you out. You know, you came here, you drove here, got your ass beat the whole time. You know, you're willing to ask questions, like, I'm willing to help a guy out.
Mm-hmm.
And that always left an impression on me. It's something I've always wanted to try to do as well as I got better at jiu-jitsu. I'm not saying I'm great at anything like that, but if something like that were to happen, I've always, doesn't matter if I went and cross-trained at a team that I had no affiliation or connection at all. If somebody asked, like, I want to be there to help somebody out. I always looked at, like, people around me getting better, I'm going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So why keep anything back? Let's just all get better together.
Mm-hmm. Man, I think that is, you know, now it's just funny how, you know, nowadays kids, white belts aren't getting put to sleep and, you know, and they get to, in a lot of places, they get to cross train and you, there's so much value now, in that. It's so funny to look back and be like, well, in my day, it wasn't like that, you know,
back in my day.
Yeah.
Let me tell you some stories.
Yeah. I used to, I'm not joking. We didn't see a black belt for 6 months, you know, and that was normal. And that was like, and now it's like, oh, there's 6 black belts. I went to Revive today. There were 9 black belts at Open
Mat. That's insane.
There were 25 people.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, man, this concentration is insane.
Unheard of back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Unheard of, man. There's nothing like that around here. It's so cool to see just the growth, especially in the Midwest. But I think what we're kind of talking about is definitely help facilitate that. Like-minded people getting together, really trying to help each other out, and just this community bond with certain teams and certain people. But yeah, man, that was so... My first instructor was a blue belt, and that was Unicorn. I think there was a brown belt across town. I had no clue who he was, but most people, I think Clean might have been the first black belt that I met, you know? And that's, I think maybe that's why I was drawn to him so much. Like, oh, this is the guy. This is, this is insane. This is a black belt. This is incredible. I don't even know what that is. This is just it's crazy to see, and I love it, man. Love to see it, and I hope we just continue to grow like that. And just before you know it, there's more black belts than not. You know what I'm saying? There's just rooms full of black belts, and it's just awesome to see. I really love it.
So looking back, were there any like first couple black belts you got to roll with? Were there any wild experiences with those guys, or was it, you know, what was the kind of mentality with other, if you got to even train with other black belts at that time?
So for the longest time, it was really just clean, and I really didn't get open up to a whole bunch of, unless he brought somebody in specifically, I didn't really get open up to a room full of black belts until like 2011 when I moved down to Florida. But that was with, like I was saying, it's like it didn't, you were just there, you were just a body to those guys. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, just feeling what that felt like to be at a certain level, like doesn't matter really how they were treating me. I wanted to be at that level, and I felt like that was the price to pay to be in a room like that. It was just, so I think the first time I trained with Cyborg, Roberto Abreu, they had the team called Avengers down there, and he was one of the first ones where like, he was beating me up so bad. He's like, just start on my back, kid, just start on my back. And somehow he would get off and like do his tornado guard, and I'd be up in the air and he'd be submitting me, and like, I'd be dumbfounded about what's going on, and he'd just walk off. That was just like, that was his warm up round. And I'm like, didn't even get a chance to ask a question, or even did I? Well, I was so scared to ask. Yeah. Like, it was Cyborg, dude. I was like, it's just being like, it was just kind of a different time, and being in a room like that, like they were all high level competitors still, and they, I was lucky enough to be welcome into whatever their pro training was. So to me, it was like, that was the price I paid to be in that room. So be it. But it, I mean, it's changed quite a bit now. But back then, it was like, you're just a body. You're just a warm body. You got a heartbeat. You're gonna get smoked today, and hopefully, you pick up something while you're getting smoked. But right. I definitely remember that specifically with Cyborg. I'm like, I'm on your back, and how did you get out, escape? And now I'm on one of your legs, and I'm flipping through the air like I'm riding a roller coaster within 10 seconds, dude. Or like, you know who Jake McKenzie is?
Uh-huh.
So he was a brown belt at the time, and he was beating me so bad. It was like 3 minutes into like a 7 minute round, he just shook my hand and walked off.
Oh, no. Like, oh,
seven or eight times in 3 minutes. He's like, thanks, kid. And just, I was like, do I just leave? Do I walk home from Miami right now? Like,
yeah. Is there one sentence you could tell me, man, that could help me not get submitted seven times in 3 minutes?
Thanks.
Yeah.
You're welcome, I guess. Yeah. What do I say to that? You just demoralized me, dude. And I'm like, I get it, I guess, because I'm not doing anything.
What do you think when people say that black belts then were not as good as the black belts now? Because you got to train with really good black belts then. What is your thought on that?
Yeah, I think the game's grown so much, man. And mm-hmm. and it's gotten so popular now that like, I mean, you see, like take like a Cole Abate for instance, like the level that he's at, that he got to at 17 or 18 years old, because how, you know, you could kind of see the wave of jiu-jitsu getting popular. And then you got these parents that are pulling these kids out of school and moving them to AOJ at like 5 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. They're getting homeschooled, but their homeschool is training. Like that's just what they're doing. I'm like, oh yeah, man, the levels. But it's always going to feel high level to me because I was a blue belt then, and it just feels like no matter what they did, it was special. Mm-hmm. But just to see how it's, yeah, I definitely think, and it's just, I feel like it's going to, I don't really, you feel like there's ever going to be like a cap, like you can only get so good. I feel like jiu-jitsu is so infinite that it's like there's always going to be something new. There's always going to be something that somebody's going to, a new innovation that's going to change things or change the way people are training or a different meta or whatever people say. About how certain things are going, and then that kind of, you kind of get used to that, like the leg lock situation or the bolo situation, people get used to that, and then there's a new creation. It's like there's so much stuff back in like 2011 that's wouldn't even, like nowadays, like wasn't even a thing or even a thought back then. So it has to have, like, mm-hmm. it has to have grown so much. Like it has, the level has to be different mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, the pool is so much wider, you know, and so it's just like, you have thousands of people in each major city training jiu-jitsu, and you used to have 10, you know? And so there's going to be that huge transition.
Yeah.
I always wonder if that was more of like a marketing from the older generation of like, oh no, our group was better than, was better. No. We knew all that stuff, but we played closed guard and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I do definitely think that that could be.
Yeah.
So I purposely have never asked you about this because I thought I would wait for the podcast.
Okay.
So I guess it would have probably been almost a year ago. We are in Nashville competing. I'm at the podium. And in your best recollection.
Well, I remember.
Because I don't, I've never, you know, I've been around you 100 times since then. We've done coached a bunch of tournaments together. Haven't asked you in your recollection, what did you see? What went down?
Okay, so my thing with, should we say his name? I mean, we've already talked about it, right? AJ. My that whole thing with me and AJ started back in 2011 when I lived in Florida and he was a purple belt. So I was already kind of on edge. I've always been on edge around him anyways. I just could never stand the guy, the way he treated me when I was a blue belt and he was a purple belt at this tournament. I'll never, like, it was etched in my mind how he acted towards me and how he just acted like this god in front of all of us, because he was good back. I mean, he's good at jiu-jitsu, man. Mm-hmm. He's great at jiu-jitsu. He's won a lot of big things, black belt world champion. But he kind of, like, owned that in his personality. And if we had this tournament called Copa America. It was in Lakeland, Florida. My division was done. I wasn't doing any of the pro divisions. It was a blue belt. I was done. I had double gold to the blue belt stuff. Felt great about myself. So I was just kind of like the team that I was going to go get waters for everybody or whatever, right? And I ask a couple of the other teammates. I get to AJ, and I'm like, hey, AJ, you want something from the store? I'm going to go get some water. And he's bad at chewing his nails already, but he's in the middle of chewing his nails. And he turns and looks at me and gives me, like, this disgusting look that I even talked to him and spits one of his fingernails at my feet. And I was like, don't ever talk to me again. Said something. I was like, don't ever effing talk to me again. Like, I was just some nobody, which I was. But, like, that's not how you talk to somebody that you mm-hmm. don't know. I don't care who you are. So that, you know, that kind of started my hate for AJ a long time. That was more than 10 years before the whole situation happened at Nashville. But then we realized you guys are going to face each other. And I just watched him at Pans, and he's a big sore loser, dork. He went to go Cassino, which I've trained for. Great guy, man. I love Cassino. I've trained with him a bit before. He went to go shake, or Cassino went to go start the match, shake his hand, and AJ ducked and took a shot. He ended up losing the match because that's what you get, dork. But me and Nick were talking to you about it. Like, hey, don't shake his hand. And you didn't. You could tell that kind of fired him up a little bit. And then you end up beating him. I'm like, well, AJ's going to AJ. All right. Had a feeling something was going to happen because he just loves starting drama for no reason at all. And like I said, I was like, I'm going to go to the podium. I'm going to be right there. If AJ does some dumb stuff, like, let me be the one. I'm going to get there first. I forgot who was standing. I think I was standing next to, I think, Summer, a couple other from your team. I'm like, something goes down, I'm going to get there. Yeah. Don't, like, it'll be blinking an eye, man. I have 10 years waiting. So, I mean, AJ does what AJ does. You know, he did what he did. He shoved you, and I think I made it there in half a second.
Half a second before his arms were away from me, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I gave him a pretty good shove, and I'm pretty sure what I said was, like, I was heat of the moment, and when it's, like, heat of the moment, I'll say some stupid shit. I was just down, and there's Gracie Baja guys there. I'm like, whatever, man. Like, it's not about winning a fight. I'm like, you do something dumb, especially to one of my friends, and I've already got animosity towards you. Like, you guys can kick my ass, but I'm going to hit. Like, I'm getting one off, dude. Like, you're going to fill at least one of these bad boys. I got there quick, end up shoving him pretty hard. And saying something about him being known for being a douchebag and not shaking people's hands. He's like, well, I'm a douchebag. I'm like, yeah, you're a fucking douchebag. Everybody knows it, bro. He goes, oh, I am? And then he just walked out like there was nothing after that. And then the typical AJ fashion, walked past him later on that day. No eye contact, nothing. Like, he's just there to stir up shit. But, like, there's only so many, dude, how I go about things, and especially how he treated me when I was younger. I'm like, I don't care if it's an act or whatever you're trying to do. Like, you're my boy. You put hands on my boy, you already owe you 10 years worth of an ass whooping. Like, if anybody's hitting this guy, let it be me. Like, yeah. I'll take one for the team. I'll get arrested, whatever. Walk around with bail money, baby. But I'm gonna get something on him. And I thought after I shoved him, maybe it would turn into something else. But that's just what he wants. Like, he just wants to get a rile up, do his bullshit, and then act like nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And that's just who AJ is. But yeah, dude, like, I don't know how hard I shoved him, but I think, you know, 10 years came out in that shove, because I'm a little bit bigger than him, but I'm just glad I got there. And for some reason, I just knew he was going to do something dumb, and I was like, man, I'm getting there.
I'm ready for it.
I don't care how many people I got to jump over to get there. I'm getting there. And I feel pretty good about myself for that one.
And I think back to the tag team meeting where they said, you're cool with Devin. You're like his, you know, You approve of Devin. You think he's a good dude, right? I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think back to that, I'm like, good call.
Yeah, dude.
Good call right there. You know, that was, yeah, that was a wild one. But I just saw, I get shoved and all of a sudden there's a Parada shirt in front of me. And then like six Head Nod shirts in front of me. I'm like, oh, okay. I was just looking at the back of everybody's logo.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. I guess I'm out of this. So people are pulling me. I'm like, okay, I guess I didn't even realize I was in this.
They're getting you out of there. I get to him first. I see Nick Flink in the back. I'm like, boy, if it pops off, bro. And you might have some Gracie Baja guys here, but man, we're ready for it. We're ready for it. We're not, you know, if it goes farther, I think things are going to play out just fine.
But that being said, because we're all reformed in tag team, that's what we used to have done. We just, you know, always rise above everything now.
Yeah,
you know, never argue with anything.
Let things slide off your shoulders.
Yep. We turn the other cheek.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad we do that.
Yeah.
You know? I'm glad we do that.
Yep.
So I just kind of, you know, as we kind of get to the end of the conversation, I always like to finish with one of the same questions, and lately I have been asking, and I'm really curious with you what this will kind of turn out to be, but what is some of or the best jiu-jitsu advice that you've gotten, and or just what pops into your head when you get that question?
I think it's really just whenever you're in the room, being present and making your time count, like being, I think I've said it quite a bit, just being intentional with your time. Like when you show up, your presence, you're there to learn, you're there to get better, and you're there to just to be, I think just being intentional. And when I really started showing up with like that kind of mindset of like making this time count every single day and not just showing up to just train and say that I trained and try to push through it and just say that I trained hard, but getting something, like trying to get something out of it. And I even started to a point taking notes, which I never really done that before. There was a certain time where I'd write things down, and going to look back on that, just seeing where my mindset was at and just processing those thoughts from then, now, and just having a certain reason to be there and being very intentional with your time and making that time count. I think once somebody really explained to me what that was, because I'm like, I'm here training hard. I'm getting after it. Like, it's got to count for something. But it always, like we had spoke about earlier, like sometimes it was just, weren't really getting better at jiu-jitsu. You're just saying you're training hard. You're just doing this, you're doing that. But like, there's got to be intention behind what you're doing, whether you're drilling, training, like just being intentional with your time and finding ways to get better no matter what, no matter who's in the room. You can get better. You can be a black belt and getting better with a room full of white belts as long as you're intentional with your time and you have plans and you have ideas for what you want to get better at and you're working on these things and just making the most of your time. I think when I started hearing people talk about being intentional and really understanding what that meant is really when I was kind of, I think, hit a curve in my jiu-jitsu where I was starting to get better at certain things just because I was, a lot of times I would drill it just to be like, oh, I don't know if I'll ever really do this or I'll ever really do that. Or there was a lot of I don't knows. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Now it's like, this is what I know I'm doing today. This is what I know, what I want to get better at. And I'm getting older now, 36 now. I'm not saying I'm super old, but, you know, time counts. So when it's time to get better, it's time to be in the room. Not only is it going to make you better to be intentional, it's going to make the people around you when you're intentional with your time and you're trying to make something out of it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, better way to explain it than that, just being focused and making the time count, because you really don't, like, who knows what can happen, man. Like, that's why when you say set goals, like I'm here for today, I'm here to be intentional for today, I'm here to get better today, but whatever happens after that, at least I know I did my work today. Mm-hmm. So just being more intentional with my time.
Do you have any tips for somebody who maybe struggles with being intentional?
I think a lot of it has to be, and you don't really get to choose who you're surrounded by, but finding, if you have that thing in you that wants to get better, finding like-minded people, and no matter what team you're on, there's got to be somewhere else in that somebody else in that gym, because some people just want to show up, say they were there, check their time card, get out of there, whatever. There's going to be somebody around you that wants to do a little bit more, wants to work on specific things, or has ideas that they want to get better at, and being more intentional with their time. I would say try to find, whether it's on your team or not, like we were talking about earlier, that the teams that come together, just trying to find like-minded people who have the same ideas and maybe goals that you have, and put in some more time with them, the time that you can with them, because you're going to benefit from that. Being not just showing up to show up, but showing up with a reason why you're there, with something to get done. You're not saying you're going to get crazy good overnight, but you're going to get better over time. There's been plenty of times where I've been stuck in these ruts, and I'm just like, what am I doing? I'm training hard. I feel like I'm every day I leave, I'm beat up. I feel like I got after it, but I was just thrashing around. I wasn't really doing jiu-jitsu. Like, there wasn't much intentions there. I wasn't like, I'm going to work this specific guard pass, whether this person knows it or not. This is what I'm trying to do. And when I started to do that specifically with live training that wasn't situational, it's like, say I'm training with a blue belt and I could phone that round in and just hold him in my closed guard and not get better. I'm like, no, I'm going to try to get, if I want to hit this on a black belt, I need to start tuning it up here. I need to be more intentional at that time. And finding like-minded people that were in that same mind frame is really when I really started feeling the benefit of that. But even if you don't, like, just having those like things you want to get better at and using your live training that may be outside of what your coach is teaching you or what they have in the store for you, because what you're drilling throughout the week or whatever you're doing might not be something that you're crazy about right now, but you do get your own time. Almost every single training session, you're going to have 30 to 45 minutes of your own training time. And what you do in that time is going to mean the most to you. And just being intentional about the time and working on what you need to get better at and having a focus, I think, really helps mesh things together pretty well. I know what it did for me. I know just having ideas and no matter what, like even when push comes to shove or there's other openings for other things, I'm like, no, this is what I'm trying to get better at. I'm going to stick to this until I feel like it's well-rounded or something I need to move on or seeing something else in that area that I need to be getting better at compared to just training to train. Like for years, I just trained to train to be tough and just say that I did it or just prove myself I can make it through hard training or train hard every day. Or I'm the toughest guy, whatever. It's like, it's not really getting me better at jiu-jitsu until I decided to really open my mind and figure out, you know, a lot about yourself and what you're weak at, which not a lot of people want to think about. Like in certain areas, they don't want to hear themselves talk about, oh, I could be doing this. Well, I'm so good at this. I'm just going to keep doing that. Well, you're never going to shore up this area. Mm-hmm. There's going to be somebody that's going to find you, that's going to show you that you should have been doing the work over here and been more intentional with your time. So that's when I started hearing that more and really giving that a thought. That's when it really started, things started clicking for me a little bit more. And I feel like, no, even back in like, I didn't start doing really open guard until 2020 and I hurt my neck again. But then like I had no other options but to be intentional about certain trainings. And now I feel like, open guard's not great, but I never would have done that unless I would have pulled myself back and be like, what do I need to get better at? What do I need to focus on? Like, you got to peel it back a little bit and get uncomfortable a little bit, but that only is the best thing you can do for your growth is just being more intentional with your time.
Man, that's huge. I totally agree. I think that is, to me, that's the one thing that the best guys always have in common is that they have focus on certain things, and it's not just random. And it's so much easier to just be random because jiu-jitsu is fun.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, well, I can just show up and I can just train, you know, I can just do whatever. But when you go in, even like to the seminar tomorrow, if I'm, you know, even at this point for me, if I'm going into the seminar, I'm like, I am here to learn something.
Yeah.
Right. I'm 100%. Here to come away with something that I can be better at. Because if not, why am I here?
Exactly. Yeah. Having an open mind, and it might not be technically your flavor of jiu-jitsu or a move that you're even into, but there's going to be some sort of benefit somewhere. If you see it and you're open to it and you're open-minded about it, you might be stuck in that position. You might not do it, but you might be stuck in it one day. And because you allowed yourself to be intentional with that time, you kind of have a roadmap to how to get out of it or how to deal with it a little bit, even if it's something that you don't even do. So I used to be big on like, no, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is my game. Even at like purple belt, I was like very like closed off. And then eventually like, when I really felt like I started to grow, I was like, I might not do this, but I need to understand what's going on here. I need to be a little bit more intentional about what's happening to me and not just shoving away. Like, no, as long as I get here, I'm fine. What if you don't get here, bro? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
Like, you need to understand what's going on in other areas of the game. The only way you can really do that is being more intentional with that time and being open to new ideas, whether they work for you in your favor offensively or whatever or not. At least you've seen something that might help you down the road. So you can't just brush everything off. I mean, there's some stuff. You see on Instagram, like a 13-move technique on a dead body. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know what I'm saying? There's value everywhere. Like, as long as you keep your mind open to that and have some intentions as far as learning it and drilling it and kind of getting an understanding for it, like, you're going to get better. So why not? Why not give it a shot?
Mm-hmm. Man, I think that's terrific advice. Devin, is there anything you want to say to finish?
I'm just grateful to be on the show again. Thank you for having me again, man. It's always an awesome time hanging out with you guys. And, you know, if you're in my side of town and I've talked crazy about the Wednesday nights, if you think you're up to it, man, I'd love that. I have an open door policy. My gym's called Prada Jiu-Jitsu. Anybody, I'm willing to give anybody a shot, man. And I just want to keep doing my part to grow jiu-jitsu in my area, in my town, in my Granite City over in the, on my side of Missouri or in Missouri. So, I'm just excited to be in the position I'm in to hopefully influence some others to get the most out of themselves and find their path, whether it be jiu-jitsu or anything else in life. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. Thank you for being on the show, man.
Thank you.
All right, guys, and that is the episode. Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I'm trying a new thing where I am putting just info about the episode in the intro, and then all of the, I think podcasters will call it housekeeping, but just all the other stuff that we have, the hearing from me part of the episode, I will just put it at the end, and then you guys don't have to hear me ramble. You know what I'm saying? And so if you don't want to, but then if you like hearing Josh, then you can, right? So there are definitely reasons, but there is a lot to kind of go over for me at the end of this episode. Just so you guys know, if you guys decide to have Devin in for a seminar, 10 out of 10 seminar. He did so good. I feel like every single one of my students that I talked to, and it was a packed house. I think there were, man, there were like 40 people, probably, maybe a little more. My gym was pretty tight with that. It was great. And yeah, just what he taught was great stuff. And then also, as you guys just got to hear him on the podcast, his perspective is just so valuable. And so, yeah, I think you guys have Devin in for a seminar. Definitely worth it. You guys, I'm sure, could just send him or Prada Jiu-Jitsu on Instagram a message, and you could hear about that. But then some other things I wanted to make sure to mention. If you guys liked the drama part of this episode in the last 15 minutes, I did do an entire episode on this, on the whole situation. And it is, you know, about how, I think it's called How Your Favorite Podcaster Beat a World Champion. And so, and that he didn't take it well. And I talk about the whole story. But then I also, and I think is more valuable, I did a match breakdown of that match. And I think a lot of people really enjoyed that. Also on the YouTube channel, also completely free. Check that out. Where else? Oh, yeah. And then, I've had some people, you know, I've been teasing some different instructionals and things that we're doing on the podcast right now. And I don't want to lie to you guys. So I'll just keep updating you as things go on, because we're still figuring out how we're going to release stuff. It's fun. I'm at this point now where it's like I have these courses and stuff done, but the release of them, we're putting a lot more time in. It used to feel like, man, we just release it as soon as we get it done. But I have something really, really special that me and Logan just started working on, have been working on, but just really started to get going, get rolling for the podcast and the podcast listeners to help you guys get better at jiu-jitsu. And it really is... when I look at it, it's the best stuff that I have, and it's done in a way that is very unique and very true to the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show listener. And so I think you guys are going to really like what we have coming down the pipeline, but I would say I would give us a couple months still. I was hoping beginning of the year stuff, but you know how the babies and stuff, how they ruin everything. Man, I said so. I made a joke about my son at church the other day, and this lady looked at me, and you know, it was something about, like, you know, how I hate him or something. I don't know. It was a joke, though. It was very obvious. I said it very sarcastically. She looked so appalled at me. It was like, old lady Kronyach, you need to chill out, you know. Yeah, what a way to end that episode on that story. But yeah, all those things you can check out. There's so much more that you can listen to on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. And yeah, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. I won't ramble any longer. Thank you one more time to Devin Prada for being on the show. I just love those conversations. He'll definitely be somebody we try to get in, maybe with another guest too. But that's all I have for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and I hope it helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.